Welcome back to the Damage Report. I am Rayvana, filling in for John Iadarola, who is no longer on baby watch, but rather watching his baby, which is so exciting. And we love that for him. We've got a lot of really good stories for you today. We're going to be talking about updates on Trump's arraignment and all of his indictments. We're going to break down the schedule of what that's going to look like moving forward. We're going to give you an update on Kyle Rittenhouse and his attempts to protect the rights of mass shooters in Texas. We're going to talk about some technology that has not just been used for stalkers, but was advertised to stalkers by the company that made it, and how some brave women are fighting against that in a lawsuit. We're going to give you updates on the Republican primary. And joining me to do all of that today is Jackson White, Rebel HQ contributor and host of Politics and Paper on YouTube. Jackson, two times this week we've gotten to do a show together.
Two times. And I was telling people too, I was like, I don't know exactly who's going to be with me on the Damage Report, because as you pointed out, you know, now John is Papa John. He's doing his fatherly duties. Congratulations to them for bringing in a beautiful baby girl. But yeah, I was like, I'm assuming it's probably going to be Ray, because that's typically how things go. And lo and behold, that's how things went this time. But yeah, no, we was on early on Tuesday. We had a good run, so that was fun.
Yeah, we're gonna have another good one today. So yes. Why don't we go ahead and jump right into it? So let's.
This demands action, and it demands it right now. So if you live in Georgia, here's what you demand: a special session of the Georgia legislature immediately. Defund the Fulton County DA's office and remove Fannie Willis from power immediately. And if a judge tries to stop you, ignore them. Ignore them. In every other red state, here's what you demand: cease all cooperation with the federal government on anything immediately. No cooperation on any law enforcement. No providing any requested federal data. Treat the Biden regime as, at best, an occupying power in a conquered land.
At this point, they have to be calling her Fanny on purpose. It's Fawny. It's Fawny. They know it by now. It feels like they're just saying that to as like a cruel nickname. But anyway, what was really going on there, aside from his childlike name calling, was something a lot more insidious, and that would be the call for threats. And we need to prepare for more that are coming, because we've seen multiple instances that Trump's base obviously is very likely to be coerced into violence, and it's already on the brink of happening now. So everyone check out this headline that came out from KKTV. It says, photos, addresses said to be of Georgia grand jurors who indicted Trump posted on far right website. And Donnie O'Sullivan over at CNN broke this down a little bit and wrote that names, photographs, social media profiles, and even the home addresses purportedly belonging to members of the Fulton County grand jury that this week voted to indict former President Donald Trump and 18 co-defendants are circulating on social media, with experts saying that some anonymous users are calling for violence against them. And that's the only reason that you could justify posting their names, their addresses, their faces. That is in and of itself a call to violence, even if they're not explicitly saying, you know, what people should do with that information. Posting it is in and of itself a call to violence. Now, we cannot here independently verify if the photographs, the social media accounts, and the home addresses being posted actually belong to the grand jurors, but CNN did write that. However, the names being circulated on these sites appear to match the names of at least 13 of the 26 grand jurors that served on the panel in Fulton County. It's unclear if those names are the actual grand jurors or just people with the same name. Some addresses appear to be wrong. So some people who just incidentally have the same name as some of these jurors are having their home addresses leaked online to a crowd of very angry and very not very intelligent people who are willing to use violence against their perceived political opponents. Not that it would be justified if it was the right people and all the right addresses anyway, but I mean, some unsuspecting person and their family might be the victim of right-wing violence just because they had the same name as someone on that jury. Absolutely absurd. And some of the posts basically accused District Attorney Fani Willis, who's a Democrat, of stacking the grand jury with left-wing activists. Again, no evidence of this. But the politics and voting history of potential grand jurors was not discussed during the selection process last month. So she would actually have no way of knowing that she did that, which occurred again. This was mostly an open court and was observed by CNN and other reporters at the courthouse. And also, this was not even close to being the only case they heard. The panel of Atlanta area residents was sworn in earlier this summer and voted on routine indictments in gun and drug cases. Before Willis brought them the Trump case on Monday, they spent roughly 10 hours behind closed doors hearing testimony presented by prosecutors and from key witnesses, including Georgia's former lieutenant governor and two former state lawmakers, before approving the historic indictment. And Jackson, I mean, just in my opinion, just posting their photos, their addresses, their names, am I right? There's nothing else that people could do with that. That is a call to violence.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, if there's one thing for sure and for certain is, unless somebody is, you know, mentally impaired in some type of way, people be knowing what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? Like, especially by the time you come to be an adult, you've been in the working world, you've been in relationships, you've dealt with people, you learn the tricks of the trade. People know what they're doing most of the time. So there's really no excuse for it. But also out of Texas, a woman was just arrested. I can't recall her name, but she was leaving messages for Judge Chutkan. Mm-hmm. And also Sheila Jackson Lee. They were leaving messages on her saying, you know, all the Democrats and the entire LGBTQ community, you know what I'm saying, we gonna be in the streets. They arrested her for it. So people see these types of posts and they absolutely do take action with it. But the craziest thing to me about it all is at this point, it's clear that the bulk of Republican voters are going to go down with the shit with Donald Trump. You know, despite the fact that he's really just a clown game show host who's blown everything he's ever touched. Despite that, this is their guy. And you know, we got people on television like we opened up with saying, like, you know, just ignore all the law. Just get out there in the streets and cause trouble, basically. He ain't gonna do none of that. But clearly people out here will do it. So this is purposeful.
Exactly. And we've seen these people are literally willing to give up their livelihoods. They're willing to risk going to jail for the rest of their lives. They're willing to, you know, engage in these criminal activities in service for what you said, a game show host, Donald a clown, a goofball. Like, right. It makes me so beside myself. And also just to, you know, have to report that Fani Willis and the Atlanta sheriff are having to take measures to protect the courthouse. I mean, it's so depressing, but that is now the world that we're living in because of these escalating threats of violence. Now, Willis plans to move full steam ahead despite all of this on trying to trying the former president. CBS News Atlanta report on this. They wrote that Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis has asked a judge to set a trial date of March 4th, 2024. For former President Donald Trump and his 18 co-defendants. Willis has also asked to schedule arraignments for the defendants for the week of September 5th, according to a court filing, and says the proposed dates do not conflict with Trump's other criminal cases. Now, these filings indicate that Willis is seeking to quickly initiate the process of sharing discovery with all 19 defendants and wants to keep her word to hold a trial within 6 months. They also, I have some thoughts, but I'll just read the facts for you first before I give those. The relatively tight calendar Willis is proposing could be complicated by pretrial maneuvering by the defendants. Already on Tuesday, lawyers for former Trump chief of staff Mark Meadows filed a quick motion to transfer the case from state to federal court. Federal judge on Wednesday set a hearing on the matter for August 28th. And it's really highly speculated that Trump's probably going to do the same thing, and several of the other co-conspirators, the defendants in these trials. I think that I think that she's doing the right thing by setting the trial date to be quickly. I think that it's aspirational. I think that it will not happen that quickly. I think that a lot of these the co-conspirators probably gonna, particularly Mark Meadows, will be successful in having their case removed from the state level to the federal level. We'll keep an eye out and report on that as it comes down, but I still think that even with a case with all of these co-conspirators. Of course, discovery is going to be difficult between all of them and all of their pretrial motions that they're going to try to slow the process down with. But I think that she's still well within her rights to try to make the trial happen as fast as possible. And speaking of trials, Trump's got a lot of them coming up. We have a timeline of all of those from the New York Times. You can see, you could follow along, make fill out your bingo card with Trump trials happening. So Jackson, is it too aspirational that she wants to set this trial so soon? I mean, it is really soon, within 6 months from now. Although it doesn't conflict with any of his other trials, should it take a longer process? Should they try to gather as much evidence as possible, or do you agree with this quick trial date?
I mean, from my standpoint, you know, why not go forward as quickly as possible? The dude's got 3 other indictments. He was impeached twice, and he done been in court more times than anybody can count on a million hands. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is his life. There's really nothing to guess. So, and what difference would it really make in regards to if she does it now or later? It's not gonna fly with the Republican base no matter what. You know, and hilariously too, you know, again, Donald Trump cannot keep himself from getting into more trouble. So again, he's gonna get in more trouble after this, whether it be because of what he does with campaign finances or something else. You know, him and his people, they spend the weekend, you know, calling Fannie Willis, what were they calling, junior varsity Fannie, like, what does that even mean? Like, what are you even trying to do? What are you even getting at? And then his entire campaign is nothing but trying to stay out of prison. You know, and it's not like that's a secret or anything. But I mean, this dude is trying to get Brian Kemp to change Georgia law so that he can stay out of prison. And Republicans are like, yep, that's my dude. You're not thinking about wages, you're not thinking about healthcare. But then if you ask these people this, they'll be like, well, yeah, you know, I do. I've been working for this company for 30 years and my pen, like that, they'll say the same things that everybody says. But then they just can't help but tap in to you know, that hatred for the others. You know, the gays and the blacks and the browns, you know, we gotta, because that's all Trump is. He's a wall from stopping the browns and the gays from being more brown and more gay. Because right, otherwise, y'all could just choose somebody else, right? But no, they're not gonna do that.
All right, and speaking of Trump, let's talk about what he had to say in this, I don't know, it's not a tweet. A truth that he posted to his social media site. He said, remember, all of these indictments, federal, state, and local, were conceived and generated by Crooked Joe Biden, not a great nickname, and Sleepy Joe had a lot more staying power, and his staff of radical left lunatics and thugs with the capital T for purposes of interfering with the 2020 presidential election. None of these trials should be allowed to begin prior to the election. Republicans might get tougher and must get tougher and smarter fast. Another angle to this is what the American people are thinking. So we do have some polling on that for you. Now, this is the percentage of Americans who think the charges in each indictment are serious. So as far as all Americans go, for all of the indictments, actually, it's all over 50%. Obviously, stronger amongst Democrats, pretty strong amongst independents. But what you see there that's depressing is the amount of Republicans who think that the charges in each indictment are serious. Again, these are people who are deeply unserious, and they are living in a deeply, like, they're just rejecting the reality that is in front of them, and it's depressing. But you can see those numbers drop when it comes to actually charging him. Especially with the Republicans here, look how low the percentage of Republicans is that thinks that he should be charged. Roughly all Americans, about half, believe that he should be charged with the crime. Obviously, the strongest support is up there amongst the Democrats. But to see only 15% of Republicans, gosh, that's just depressing. I mean, the abundance of evidence against this man, and they think that he should be above the law. So half of Americans believe Trump should suspend his political campaign, yet the same number believe the charges are politically motivated. from ABC News, 50% say Trump should suspend his campaign, 33% say he should not, 17% are unsure. The numbers are virtually identical when asking whether or not the charges are politically motivated. 49% say yes, 35% say no, and 16% don't know. Now, one more aspect that we've talked about, you know, maybe just in passing, but we want to focus on here briefly from CBS News. The formal arraignment expected in September will be the fourth for Trump, the only president who has ever been criminally charged. The Georgia arraignment, however, is expected to be slightly different than the others because cameras are allowed in the state's courtroom. That's one of the reasons that we see that a lot of these co-conspirators are trying to have their cases removed. Not just for this reason, but also because they're more likely to have favorable Republican appointed judges in federal court. But that is a driving force for so many of them. They don't want their trials to be televised. Now, Georgia law states that photographs and televising of the courtroom is allowed as long as it's not disrupting the proceedings. Now from NBC News, in 2018, the Georgia Supreme Court, in an order amending the law to include smartphones, underscored the importance of transparency. Open courtrooms are an indispensable element of an effective and respected judicial system. It is the policy of Georgia's court to promote access and to understanding of court proceedings, not only by the participants in them, but also by the general public and by news media who will report on the proceedings to the public. Now, a couple things we've discussed here, but I mean, Jackson, I want to ask you about the televised proceedings of these trials. Do you think that this would be largely positive, that the people get to see, you know, our former elected official answer for the crimes that he's committed, or do you think that could possibly be used to galvanize his supporters to do more violence?
I mean, honestly, I think at this point, it's just another day of Trump on television and Trump being discussed. You know, like we live in an environment where we're constantly bombarded with everything media related anyway, and Trump is about 65% of everything that we see. So I personally don't think that this is really gonna shake anything up any more than it would if it wasn't on television, because, you know, as we just went over, you got people doxing their political enemies on social media as it is. But the craziest thing to me, a few things. Now, I'll concede that it's still possible that Trump can win a general election, but with this trend and over a year left before Election Tuesday, you know, I just don't think it's plausible for him to undoubtedly get in more and more and more and more and more trouble. For the American people who already rejected him in 2020 and 2022 to be like, you know what? Forget about 2028 in the future. Let's try this guy out again. I just don't see that happening. It could, but come on, man. And speaking of command, that's basically Donald Trump's whole defense now. It's just like, come on. Like it was endless goalpost moving. You know, this doesn't matter, that doesn't matter. Everything's fake. 91 charges, all of them are fake because, you know, Donald Trump is this transformative figure who just fights so hard for the people and he gives his all. He leaves it all out on the court when he's done. And it's like this dude didn't do anything but cut taxes for corporate America. And then they talk about COVID and all the shutdowns as if he wasn't the president of the United States when COVID was at its worst. Somehow Republicans always forget that. And again, now it's like just, come on, does this really matter? Come on. That's all they got left. So really it begs the question, like, what in the hell is the Republican Party going to do after 2024 when Donald Trump almost certainly loses a general election? That, I mean, clearly they're going to be whining and crying about it forever, but what are they really going to do? What direction are they going to head? I don't know the answer to that. I don't think anybody does, but I think it should be a concern.
Right. And speaking of what direction the Republican Party might head in, let's move into this next story and talk about the presidential primary that's heating up, and particularly the Republican debates that are coming up, which Trump may be conspicuously absent from. Take a look.
I hear he's afraid to debate. Is that true? I hear he's afraid to debate.
He's too cowardly to even show up and debate.
You've
suggested you may skip the early Republican primary debates.
Why would I let these people take shots at me?
We can't afford a nominee who is too weak to debate.
These debates, they're just brutal.
We need a nominee with stamina, a nominee who's sharp. Republicans deserve a candidate who earns our vote.
But I probably won't bother doing the debate.
Not one who demands it. What happened to Donald Trump? Never Back Down is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Oh, there's nothing better than attacking somebody with their own words. I love that. Even if it is, you know, for the Republican Party, it is nice to see people taking jabs at Trump. And as they were discussing, the debates are coming up. In fact, the first one is scheduled for next week, August 23rd. And you can actually see commentary live on TYT. So make sure to check that out next week. But as of today, Trump won't be there. He posted, inexplicably posted this amazing truth on his social media site. Let me read it to you. I still can't get over it. Why doesn't Fox and Friends show all the polls where I am beating Biden by a lot? They just won't do it. And this part is what kills me. Also, they purposely show the absolutely worst pictures of me, especially the big, in quotes, orange one with my chin pulled way back. They think they are getting away with something. They're not. Just like 2016 all over again. And then they want me to debate. So
it's so unfair for Donald Trump.
I'm not complaining about the picture.
Right. And then the pictures of him when he's just out golfing and he doesn't have makeup on and he looks like just a bunch of, he just looks like a pillow sack, like a melting pillow sack. He's just like stark white. And I mean, he looks like he's almost 80. He looks like he's his age. Right. And he looks like he eats McDonald's 50 times a day. You know, I mean, that's what he looks like. So I don't really know what he's looking for. And how many other pictures? He always looks like a buffoon because that's what he is. He's a clown. So he can't help himself. His stupid hair, the dumb faces that he makes. He's always looks dumb. But I mean, hey, to his base, it doesn't really make a difference if he shows up or not. But to everybody else, it's hilarious.
Right. And so his team has confirmed that he hasn't done any prep for this debate, I don't think he's ever done any prep for any of the debates he did participate in. But the debate's being hosted in Milwaukee by Fox News. And of course, one of his advisors argued he doesn't need debate prep. They also hinted that there's always the chance that he might eventually decide to participate at the 11th hour, which is usually the time that he makes all of his decisions. And even if he doesn't go, every other GOP candidate that qualified is going to be there. So let's move away from talking about Donald Trump and look at the field. Who is struggling? Particularly, let's focus on his biggest opponent, although their biggest relative to the field. It doesn't really look like he stands much of a chance. DeSantis is sitting at 15% with Trump at 54%. You can see that massive gap between Trump and DeSantis, a steady decline in DeSantis' performance in the polls, steady incline in Trump's. And you can see DeSantis is being caught up by some of the rest of the field down there. And on the state level, DeSantis isn't doing much better. In fact, new polling shows that he's not even in second place in the presidential primary in New Hampshire. He's actually in third behind Chris Christie. And you know that makes him so mad. You know that makes him so angry. So he's tried some new strategies, one of which was giving an interview to not just right-wing drivel magazines. Instead, he spoke with Time magazine. And let's highlight a few of the things he said in that. He was asked about the rights of parents of trans children who are being prevented by Florida from accessing the medical care they believe is in their kids' best interest. Their doctors believe is in their kids' best interest. This is what he had to say. As a parent right now, I can't take my six-year-old daughter to get her a tattoo, even if I want to do that. You don't have the right to do things that are going to be destructive to kids. I think that some of these parents are being told by physicians who are making a lot of money off this that you have to do this. Otherwise, your kid can end up doing something like commit suicide. I think they get bullied into thinking this is the right decision. It is, he adds, totally appropriate for us to say that protection of children means that those things are not appropriate. I'll just add that this guy is horrible at the politics of this. I mean, that was such a huge misstep to even make that statement. Avoid the question. Why would you answer? Why would you bring suicide into your answer? Also,
who
I want
to. Who gets bullied into transitioning to? Like,
exactly.
What?
How can you compare giving a child a tattoo, something that no doctor in America is going to recommend as the best course of action to treat anything, versus medically accepted, the best course of treating gender dysphoria in children is transition care? Absolutely absurd. I want to, you know, before we get too much into this, I want to talk about some other things he said, because they did ask him what he would personally do if one of his kids were gay or trans. And his answer, absolutely non-answer, but also completely ridiculous given the things that he has passed as governor of Florida. He said, when I asked how he'll respond if one of his children turns out to be gay or trans, his eyes flash momentarily. He swiftly shuts down the question. Well, my children are my children, DeSantis says. We'll leave that between my wife and I. Incidentally, he doesn't want to allow other parents to have that same option to leave those choices between the parents and their doctor. He wants to insert the state into the family. But as part of his campaign reboot, he also, again, political missteps everywhere. He fired his campaign manager and hired James Uthmeyer, who previously served as his gubernatorial chief of staff and has never managed a political campaign, not just at the national level, at any level. He's never managed a political campaign. And from that Time Magazine article, the governor's got a great message, but people aren't gonna know about it if we don't tell them. Over and over in Iowa and New Hampshire, Uthmeyer says he hears voters say they were planning to vote for Trump, but changed their minds after hearing from DeSantis directly. We've got the smartest guy in the room. It's someone else. Somebody who actually studies the policy, knows it inside and out, and has ideas to succeed in executing that policy. It's all about packaging that knowledge in a way that's clear and concise and relatable to voters. He likens DeSantis to a running back who waits for the right opening. Oh my goodness, just missteps everywhere from the moment this campaign launched through the entire thing. How can you say that you have support coming out of Iowa when you had to bus in fake supporters from other states and pay them to wear DeSantis shirts? I mean, Jackson, this guy's campaign has just gone off a cliff.
Yeah, it has. And I feel so vindicated, because I've been saying for quite some time that Ron DeSantis does not have the juice. He does not have what it takes. But I mean, whether it be telling a kid to basically F off and watch his sugar intake. he told the kid to screw off. And then, I mean, everything, like, your mind ends up blanking, because everything he does, everything he says is crazy. I was laughing because he had the 1,000-yard stare. His life flashed before his eyes. Like, what if one of your children end up becoming one of the members of the queer community in some kind of way? And he was like, his whole life flashed. He was like, I prefer not to answer that. But you see Chris Christie polling past him, and he was the guy. I mean, Ron DeSantis, he had the red carpet laid out for him. He was the one who was gonna take over Trump. And now, I mean, I think it's still too far away, and it's a bit of a stretch, but one, I won't be surprised if he drops out of the race at some point. Maybe not, but there's only so much, beating up a person can take. But I won't be surprised if he doesn't win re-election in Florida. And again, it's still a stretch to say that. But if he just keeps looking like a loser time after time after time, then he doesn't have a strong campaign going up for re-election. So again, it's still a little early to say that, but nothing about his brand is going up. It's all going down. And it's all because he drank the Donald Trump Kool-Aid.
Right, and the only reason he became the governor of Florida in the first place was because his Democratic opponent had a sex drug scandal before the election. Then he got the Donald Trump endorsement, as Trump described. He cried on the phone with him, begging
him. begging and pleading.
I choose to believe that that's true. I know Trump is a big time liar. I would like to just personally believe that that's true.
In some fashion, yeah, for sure.
Right. Okay, we'll keep you guys all updated on what's going on with the election. Again, don't forget to check out, TYT is gonna be hosting a panel to give commentary on the debate when that happens next week. So make sure that you check that out. Again, it is Wednesday, August 23rd. Welcome back to the Damage Report. Ravana here with Jackson White, and we've got some updates on the state of reproductive rights and abortion rights in this country. So let's get right into this next story. The fight for abortion pill access continues after a federal appeals court on Wednesday said it would limit access to the abortion pill mifepristone, ruling that the Food and Drug Administration had overstepped its authority with a series of actions that made it much easier for Americans to obtain the drug, such as allowing prescriptions to be filled by mail. Reminder that this is a medication abortion. It is completely safe. It's even safer than some regular over-the-counter medications that we take most days. But let's get into this ruling, because it's unlikely to have an immediate impact on access to the drug because of an earlier Supreme Court decision that paused any changes to the status quo. Now, the appeals court ruling does, however, set up another showdown at the SCOTUS over access to the drug as well as abortion rights. Now, this ruling was from a 3-judge panel of the New Orleans-based 5th US Circuit Court of Appeals, all three of whom were nominated, of course, by Republican presidents. So let's get into the facts of this from USA Today. The appeals court panel waived off part of the lawsuit that challenged the FDA's underlying approval of the drug, ruling that it was likely barred by the statute of limitations. It also allowed the FDA's approval in 2019 of a generic version of the drug to stand. But the panel affirmed a US district court ruling that blocked a move by the FDA in 2021 to allow the drugs to be dispensed through the mail. The appeals court also ruled against FDA decisions in 2016 to let pregnant people take the drug 3 weeks longer into a pregnancy and to let pharmacists prescribe the drug instead of just doctors. This is from the court ruling. I'm going to read it for you. In loosening mifepristone's safety restrictions, FDA failed to address several important concerns about whether the drug would be safe for the women who use it. It failed to gather evidence that affirmatively showed that mifepristone could be used safely without being prescribed and dispensed in person. That is absolute BS. If you know anything about mifepristone, it's also an absurd overstep by the court that they would insert themselves as the authority on this matter. Think about it. Who do you want making these decisions about medical care? The experts at the FDA or judges who give you decisions like what I'm about to read? Because this is absurd. Now, this is a concurring opinion. So this is someone who agreed with the result that the conclusion that the court came to in their opinion, but got there a different way. So this isn't from the opinion, but this was one of the judges. And I found it this morning from this tweet that said, Judge Ho, in concurring with his colleagues to limit the use of a widely used abortion medication, which is also used for other conditions, compares a plaintiff's alleged aesthetic injury in wanting to prevent the use of the drug to wildlife watching. And I think it's important, so I'm just gonna read that brief excerpt of what he wrote. And I just want everyone to know that judges can be idiots, lawyers can be idiots. Take it from one. I know plenty of the dumbest people I've ever met are lawyers and judges. And I think this will show you that that's very much the case. He wrote, it's well established that if a plaintiff has concrete plans to visit an animal's habitat and view that animal, the plaintiff suffers aesthetic injury when an agency has approved a project that threatens the animal. Then he continues on and compares that to abortion rights. He writes this, unborn babies are a source of profound joy for those who view them. Expectant parents eagerly share ultrasound photos with loved ones. Friends and family cheer at the sight of an unborn child. Doctors delight in working with their unborn patients and experience an aesthetic injury when they are aborted. So Jackson, what this judge is actually arguing is that anybody can sue someone who has an abortion because they've suffered a harm, they've suffered an injury. If that person gets an abortion, because what? Because you didn't get to look at the ultrasound pictures? I mean, these are the people who are deciding, you know, these are the unelected people who are making major decisions about our lives in this country. And that's the type of just illiterate screed that they're putting out for the public. And I'll just also add this, horribly written. Just everything you learn in law school about how to structure a document in legal writing out the window, just disgusting writing. But Jackson, before we get into some more facts about this and the safety of mifepristone, what are your thoughts on that?
Essentially all this is rationalization of political stances. That's all it is. The Supreme Court is very politicized and many of the federal judges are very politicized. And as this country continues to lean more and more into extremism and our, you know, entire political system becomes kind of just a running reality TV show, you got to make sense out of it some way. And two people like this kind of strike me as they're trying really hard to be clever. Like, I'm gonna use my degree, or I'm gonna use my certifications to, you know, be smarter than everybody else in some type of way. But you know, at the end of the day, this is a very, very unpopular political agenda. And the Republican Party, the Republican entity in this country, is seemingly doing everything it can to take the most unpopular stances and run with them as fast as they possibly can. You know, so there's really no way to justify this. These politicians, these judges know that the people don't want this. We saw what Kansas did. We saw what happened in Ohio. And, you know, the amount of women who have taken mifepristone for whatever reason, you know, because they weren't ready or because some type of assault happened, is a lot. You know, so again, like, this impacts a lot of people. Unnecessarily so, because at the end of the day, the people who sit in high places, you know, the big donors, they don't care about this. They care about their tax cuts. They care about making sure the regulations continue to get lessened in this country, axed in this country. So this is just a big culture war that has spilled over into real legislation, and it's destroying people's lives.
Right, I've taken mifepristone, and we'll talk in a minute just about how safe this drug is. But you know, it really does like break my heart to think that I had such easy access to it. I was very lucky, and you know, to think that other women who are in similar situations to me in the future are not going to have that same access is mortifying. And especially when abortion rights have been so restricted in so many parts of the country. I mean, it's like every day there's a new story about a child who's been forced to give birth to their rapist's baby and now has to be a mother while in middle school or elementary school is mortifying. But what's also mortifying is the massive overreach that this court has done with this ruling. And so many critics are raising the alarm on how unusual it is for federal courts to weigh into decisions that are handed down by the FDA. So here's one of those criticisms. Judges are playing with fire when they interfere with medical decisions, said Lawrence Gostin, a professor of global health law at Georgetown University. If you looked at this as a cancer drug or a heart drug, you'd know immediately and intuitively that you want the FDA to be making that decision, not judges or legislators. And that's the perfect way to frame it, because it is the politicization of women's healthcare, of women's bodies, of our reproductive rights. Because exactly like he said, you would not see the same sort of ruling if it was any other type of drug that treated any other, you know, type of condition that hasn't been, you know, the focal point of Republican culture war politics. Now, the Justice Department said in a statement that it would appeal the ruling to the Supreme Court and vowed to defend the FDA's scientific judgment as well as access to reproductive care. But as we've said before, it bears repeating. I've said it throughout this entire story. The medication abortion is safe. Medication abortion accounts for about half of all US abortions, and a wide array of government agencies and outside experts have said the drug is safer than common drugs such as Tylenol and Viagra. But the anti-abortion groups challenging the drug questioned those studies and argued that the FDA didn't follow its own protocols and ignored contrary data as it expedited the drug's approval. I mean, Jackson, it would be devastating if they, you know, politicized like cancer treatment in the same way, right? But to see that they won't even politicize a more dangerous, you know, medication that, you know, is Viagra. They don't politicize men's reproductive health care in nearly the same way that they do women. So I think it'd be hard for anyone to argue that this is about anything other than controlling women's bodies and their autonomy.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, because the idea of women being able to have autonomy in the world in general makes men have to try harder, makes men have to work harder. It takes away the kind of the idea that I just belong at the top of the, you know, I'm at the pinnacle just because. Same thing as the lost cause, same thing as you know, the Republican Party desperately being tied down to Donald Trump. It's all the same, just clinging to entitlement in a lot of ways. And two, finally, I just want to close off with, you know, mifepristone, how much less that is taken, the things like Tylenol or Viagra, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like women who undergo abortion procedures in whatever manner, it typically maybe once, twice. It's typically not like, oh, I've done this 20 times. Like, sure, that may be here and there, but for the most part, but how many people are popping Cialis and Viagra every time they trying to get it on? You know what I'm saying? So like, just in terms of the ratio of how much this is taken, it's not taken that much. So again, I think you pointed it out perfectly. This really is just a war on women.
Okay, welcome back to the Damage Report. We're gonna start off this section of the show with a really sad story. One that is a preventable tragedy, because a child traveling to Chicago as part of Texas's migrant busing program died during the trip, according to a Friday afternoon statement from the Texas Division of Emergency Management. And the Texas Tribune wrote that the Chicago Tribune reported that the 3-year-old child died on Thursday when the bus was entering Chicago. The Illinois Department of Public Health confirmed to the newspaper that the state agency is investigating the death. The Texas Division of Emergency Management said that after the child's health began deteriorating, the bus pulled over and an ambulance was called. The child was taken to a local hospital where they died. TDEM's statement did not include information about the child's age, gender, or nationality. The agency said that all of the passengers in the bus were processed by U.S. Customs and Border Protection in the city of Brownsville, which included a temperature check and medical screening. No passenger had showed signs of fever or medical concerns, the agency said. Now, according to state officials, passengers were released by the federal government and willingly chose to go to Chicago after signing a consent waiver. Willingly is a term I think they're using quite loosely, considering these are people who just arrived in the country and are fearful. Also, we've been in so many stories before shown how they've been giving false information about what is waiting for them at the other end of the bus ride. They've been promised jobs, they've been promised places to stay. And so often these buses arrive and the recipient state doesn't even know that they're coming. So take that with a grain of salt. But from that statement, each bus is stocked with food and water, which are distributed on board and make stops along the trip to refuel and switch drivers. Migrants are allowed to purchase any additional provisions or disembark at any of these stops. Now, recently, Greg Abbott announced that over 4,600 migrants have been bused to Chicago in the past year. And unfortunately, this child is not even the first death, because in May, an 8-year-old died while in custody of U.S. Customs and Border Protection. An internal investigation into the child's death uncovered multiple failings by contracted personnel working at a federal border station in Harlingen, including failing to contact doctors despite the mother's pleas for help. We can and we will do better to ensure this never happens again, CPB Acting Commissioner Troy Miller said at the time of the investigation's release. Did they do better? Absolutely not. And Greg Abbott has failed these migrants. And I believe that if they were not being routed to a city that isn't ready to receive them on these bus rides with no medical care, no medical personnel on staff, that this child probably could have received much better care. And Jackson, these stories are just so devastating, because it is so absolutely preventable if we just provided better care for migrants coming to this country, especially when there's been so much talk from the Republicans about you need to migrate the right way. These people did. These people followed the legal process of seeking asylum. They did it the right way, and they're still, being treated as second-class citizens by, these Republican governments.
Well, and migrating the right way really just means I don't want to see as many of you people here. If I don't have to see you, then that must mean that things are going according to plan. But one of the things I always point out about how much of just pandering this is, pure pandering this is to an online base, is because what difference are you really making in doing this? You're not stopping anybody from coming to the border. Only in the scheme of things, a few thousand people have been bused from Texas to other states. Texas to Martha's Vineyard, Texas to Chicago. Ron DeSantis has done the same thing. And again, the only people who are really pleased to see this are people who like to see the tabloids, because otherwise this doesn't address the migrant issue whatsoever. There's way more people who come here on a daily basis than have been shipped from Texas anywhere else. And Greg Abbott seems to have a kink for just kind of being a cruel person. You know, whether it's stuff like this or like him signing legislation to where people who are in wheelchairs just like he is, you know, let's not make it easier for them to vote. You know, if right. you're handicapped, you know, people fought, bled, and died for your right to vote. So you should bleed and die too on your way to the polls. I mean, so that's just kind of who Greg Abbott seems to be. But again, at the end of the day, this, like, you're not even putting a tiny dent into how many people are coming here from the southern border. It's just for online clicks, nothing else.
Right. I mean, and this is the guy who, during a historic heat wave, repealed regulations that were in place to protect workers and gave them like a 15-minute break every 4 hours if they're working outside in the heat. And then people working out
these days. That's all it is.
People literally died from working in the heat after that happened. I mean, this is like pure distilled evil. But we've been talking about Republican hypocrisy, so let's get into this next story, because the Republicans have really been flapping their gums about the Biden crime family, as they have started describing them. But Matt Gaetz sort of peeled back the curtain and gave us some insight as to why they're trying to impeach Joe Biden by saying that it's not because we actually want to remove him from office, but we want to put on a show for the American people. He said this in a statement. The purpose of the impeachment, from my standpoint, is not to force a vote that loses. It's to put on a trial in the Senate. And by the way, not for the sake of conviction. Continues on in that statement and says, the purpose of the impeachment to me is to use the Senate as the stage, but they're not the jury. The jury is the American people. And if we had the Senate as the stage and the platform for James Comer to put on his evidence and advance this impeachment, it will not result in a conviction, but the true verdict can still be rendered by the American people. Now, what they're claiming they're doing is they're investigating the Biden family for its connections to foreign nationals. And here's a statement regarding that. House Oversight Committee Chair James Comer has overseen Republicans' investigation into the Biden family and has sought to connect the president to his son Hunter Biden's income from foreign nationals. So far, witness testimony and bank records haven't established such a connection. Now, it's why this is hypocritical is because we have quite a bit of evidence about Jared Kushner's relationships with foreign nationals. From Salon, economic analyst Stephen Ratner on Monday shared a pie chart showing that all but 1% of the $3 billion in investments in former President Donald Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner's private equity firm Affinity Partners came from foreign sources after he spent much of his White House tenure cozying up to Saudi Arabia and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. And just to give you an idea, let's put that pie chart up there because it's shocking. $2 billion came from Saudi Arabia, 200 million each from Qatar and the UAE, and then $625 from all other non-US. That tiny sliver at the top, that tiny itty bitty sliver that you can barely see because it's so inconsequential. $31 million of this is from United States investors. Now, I mean, Jackson,
that's
telling. Right, I couldn't think of a more hypocritical thing for them to do.
And the fact that so little came from the US is so telling of how politically motivated those investments were and how undeserving of those investments that he is, such that he can't raise any money in his domestic market. And again, you know, going into the type of country that Saudi Arabia is and all that. But there's no arguing here. It's like, oh, so you can't get nothing going here, but in countries like this where, you know, kings rule basically and they have an iron grip. Oh, okay, so that's what's up. But the funniest thing to me about this is, you know, the whataboutism that's played, the Trump family still comes out worse. You know what I'm saying? Like the Biden crime family. Donald Trump's father set up that empire, and he was a lot better at it too. I gotta hand it to him. He was a whole lot better at the game. You know what I'm saying? He was a real player in the game. And then he dookied out his son and he, you know, spoiled everything. And crime after crime after crime, ripping off thousands of people. We all know what Donald Trump has done. So it just doesn't stack up. But again, the Jared Kushner thing is just like, I mean, what are we even talking about here? And again, that still doesn't exonerate the Trump family. Y'all could just go find somebody else. But no, they don't care. They're not trying to do that.
And it's such a goofy messaging, in my opinion, because there's literally no evidence that Joe Biden has, you know, enriched himself from, of course, was Hunter Biden sitting on these boards of these companies because his last name is Biden? Of course he was. What the hell does he know about an oil and gas company? Nothing. But I mean, does that mean that he his father negotiated that? There's no evidence of that. That Joe Biden profited off of it? No evidence of that. Jared Kushner, the evidence is right before our very eyes. So we'll keep everybody updated as the impeachment moves forward, but we're gonna move to the aftermath for everyone on non-linear. So transfer over if you're watching on linear. If you're already on YouTube, Twitch, on TYT.com, then you're in the right place and we'll see you on the other side.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.